Judy will come and share our gospel reading.
Today's scripture is from Luke 24, verses 13 to 35. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are and how slow of heart to believe all the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told what happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread."
This Emmaus story has been one of my favorites Easter stories for a long time. Two very important times in my life were spent working in a place that was called Emmaus House. One was a transitional home for working homeless men that my husband Bill and I were part of a mission group that started that effort in Raleigh, North Carolina, not long after we got married. And it's wonderful to look on their website and see there are now 10 houses in Raleigh, North Carolina that are still a part of that Emmaus House effort. The other Emmaus House was in Atlanta, Georgia. For 2 years while we lived there, I worked at Emmaus House, which is in a neighborhood called Peoplestown, just south of downtown Atlanta, right near the old Braves Stadium. A very, very low-income, poor, predominantly black neighborhood, where an Episcopal priest in the 1960s felt, a fairly wealthy white man, felt led to go down there and buy an old house and start a ministry. and that was also called Emmaus House. What is it about this story that leads to those kind of efforts and that kind of name? Well, there's a lot in this story. I've always thinking again, listening to Judy Reed, I would love to have been walking along the road and heard what Jesus told them. Wouldn't that have been amazing to know exactly what he said to them? But you get this sense that after resurrection and these appearances that we read about, Jesus was reinterpreting himself, his own life and ministry and his death and what it all meant, how to understand it. And so this is what he was explaining to them, like why this had to happen. And again, we sit here 2,000 years later still trying to understand why did this have to happen. So I would love to have been there. But what the reason ministries get named Emmaus is not about that. It's because as they came to the end of their journey, end of the day, they were prompted, even in their grief and sorrow and all that, they were prompted to do what I think Jesus had taught them for 3 years, which was offer hospitality. Stay with us. The day's late. Don't go on. Come into our home. Eat with us. Be with us. This story has inspired radical hospitality in myriads of different forms over the years. They invite him in. They sit to eat. And again, as in all these resurrection appearances, they don't realize it's Jesus. Something about his resurrected self was different. And yet then when he breaks the bread, they know who he is. And then he disappears. Again and again, these stories are about him appearing to them, to them to understand and recognize his resurrected energetic self. And once they know, they don't need his body anymore. That's the way I understand it. He's teaching them how to know him the way we have to know him without the physical presence. But he was known to them in the breaking of the bread and the eating together. It's interesting, the word that gets translated hospitality in the Greek is philoxenia, or philoxenia, wherever you put the accent. You know the word xenophobic, xeno, foreigner, phobic, fear? This is the opposite. Philo is love, xenia, of the foreigner, of the stranger. So hospitality is about love of the stranger, love of the other. Love of the different person, the one we do not know. And that somehow in Jesus' life, he practiced over and over and over again eating with the wrong people, with the stranger, the other, the one people didn't know or the one people didn't like, the one people judged. In fact, I read this week, in Luke's gospel, there are 50 references to him eating or telling stories about eating. There's a whole book this Franciscan has written about eating through the Gospel of Luke with Jesus. And he's the one who said Jesus was crucified because of how he ate. He broke the rules. He crossed boundaries. He reached out and had table fellowship with the wrong people. Dorothy Day, of the Catholic worker movement, who founded the first Catholic worker home in New York City. Leslie Schultz lives in the local Catholic worker house, said, it's no use saying that we have been born too late to give room for Christ, because Christ is always with us, always asking for room in our hearts. But now, he asks with the voice of our contemporaries, with the eyes of a store clerk, factory workers and children, with the hands of office workers and slum dwellers and suburban housewives. It is with the feet of soldiers and tramps that he walks, and with the heart of anyone in need that he longs for shelter. Giving shelter or food to anyone asks for it or needs it is giving it to Christ. Do we dare to believe that? That Christ is in every person we might encounter? That Christ is in each of us? Dorothy Day also spoke of the ungrateful poor that we might be trying to help, which is a word of reality for all of us who want to jump into acts of compassion, expecting that we're going to be thanked and appreciated all the time. When I was up at Lake Avenue Baptist Church in Rochester, we learned that it was a lot easier to help the refugee families who arrived who were so thankful and appreciative and whose kids would sit and listen when you talked to them. Somehow our Burmese kids sat way better than those American kids from the neighborhood that would also come to VBS, who ran around, wouldn't listen. One of them even threatened a teacher with a knife one summer. And then the next day, his mom showed up to yell at us because we disciplined him. Not everyone that we're called to see as Christ is easy to love. Not everyone. But this story calls us to see if we can recognize Christ in the other, in the stranger, in the unexpected person, and in one another. And so, today, as we are coming to this communion, we're going to do it in a different way than we've done in a while. Some of us grew up with this way of doing communion. Some of us have done it here in the past, but it's been a while. But today, we're going to serve each other in the rows as we do communion, passing it down the rows. First the bread, then the cup, little cups. We're not going to try to do the big cup that way. Some of you, how many of you grew up with this, or you've done this a lot somewhere else? Right, so this is not a foreign notion by any means. Some of us grew up with coming forward. It's always been our norm. We've done both here. But it struck me, some of you have been asking to do it this way, okay, on some kind of occasional basis. But it struck me, it fits with this story. Because when you serve each other, you are Christ, and the person you're serving is Christ. We are all Christ in this moment, receiving and giving. Can you feel that? Can you kind of let your imagination hold on to that? The Spirit of Christ is alive in us, in all that we encounter. And in this moment, we are going to be Christ and receive from Christ as we share with one another. Now, I do want to say, for any of you who are visiting, here at First Baptist, we believe this is the table of Jesus Christ. This is not ours to control. Not ours to tell you you're welcome or you're not. And so, if you feel drawn to the Spirit of Christ, if you want to know God's love and seek to live it in your life, receive this gift and share it with the person next to you, knowing that all of us in this way are embodying Christ in this place and in our world.